Then we raised the sails, and I told Virginia that she would be in charge of the jib sail at the front end of the boat. And I gave her the rope that manipulated the jib sail. And I told her that I would be telling her what to do as we progressed in our sailing. Soon we cast off and sailed out into the main body of water of Lake Minnetonka. Things seemed to be going pretty well. Virginia was following orders about the handling of the jib sail, and I was handling the mainsail, and the tiller at the rear of the sailboat. I told Virginia that now we would start to go faster as I was going to tilt the boat by having more wind get into the sails. Soon we had the sailboat, I had the sailboat up on its edge, and there was a big wind that day with high waves, and the water from the lake sprayed all over our clothes, and I noticed that Virginia looked like she was scared to death. So I said to her, do you know how to swim? And Virginia said, oh yes, I know how. And I said, how far can you swim? And she said, 50 feet. At that, I decided that we'd had about all the fancy sailing it would be any fun for Virginia. So I let the wind out of the sail partially, and the sailboat settled back on an even keel, much to the relief of Virginia. After an hour and a half of sailing all around Lake Minnetonka, we put up the boat at the dock and continued our date. The next night, I had another date, and we drove around out in the country and had a lovely time. And I could see that I had been smitten by Virginia. So that night, which was our last date, I said to Virginia, Virginia, I would like to come out to Seattle and visit you. So that we can get better acquainted. How would that be? Virginia said that that would be okay. She'd like to have me come out, visit her. So I said, well, I'll tell you, Virginia, I'll be out there 2 weeks from today. Virginia nearly fainted. She thought that when I said I was coming out, that I meant sometime next year, or 3 or 4 months from now. She was not used to such precipitous action on the part of a swain. At any rate, we set the date and time that I would arrive in Seattle to start my visit. And on that date, I arrived in the airplane at the airport in Seattle and Virginia met me with her car, a Chevrolet. I said, the evening is young, and I have a registration at the hotel, so why don't we go over to your apartment and pick up some refreshments and have a good time there before I have to go back to the hotel for the night. So we went to the hotel, so we went to Virginia's apartment, and I called the hotel and told them that I was in town and would be there at about 10 o'clock that night. The next day, Virginia was excused from work for the whole day, and we took a ride out in the country. Virginia said, I think it would be fun to go to Multnomah Falls, probably 20 miles out of Seattle. And there's a nice place there at the falls to have lunch. So she was driving her Chevrolet in that direction, and we were busy talking back and forth, and I asked her a lot of personal questions, and I found out that she had just had her teeth fixed. And so I thought, well, that's a good point. I won't have to pay anything to have her teeth fixed if I should get married to her.
Are you talking about me?
Yeah. I was watching her as we talked, and she was watching me as we talked. And we were sizing each other up. And we were having a lot of flirting back and forth. In fact, we were having such a nice time that Virginia, who knew the roads very well, went right by the place where you turn off to go to Multnomah Falls. In fact, we went about 10 miles beyond the place where you turn off. Well, we had to retrace our steps, so we turned around, went back the 10 miles, and turned off at Multnomah Falls, and we had a nice lunch there and looked at the falls, and after traveling around for a while in the afternoon, we went back to Virginia's apartment. One thing led to another, and it came to be the last day that I was going to visit Virginia, and that's when I proposed marriage to her. She accepted my proposal, and we decided that we would be married sometime in December, this being September. I went back to work in Minneapolis, and later on, about the last of October, Virginia made her last buying trip to New York City for her employer, as she was the buyer for the fashion merchandise of the Bon Marché, the largest department store west of Chicago at that time. The employer, of course, was shocked when told by Virginia that Virginia was going to marry a man from Minneapolis, and she was going to have to leave Le Bon Marché and move to Minneapolis. Le Bon Marché told Virginia that it would be nice if she would make one more buying trip to New York. So, on this week in October, I believe it was, she made this trip, and it so happened that I was on an inspection trip of construction work we were performing in New England. Of course, we got together in New York and had a very nice time there. And then she went back to her Seattle job and her home there. And I went back to work. About 2 weeks later, I decided that I didn't want to wait until December to get married. So I telephoned Virginia from Minneapolis to Seattle and suggested that we push up the wedding date to late in November. Well, she said she'd see what she'd go to the boss and tell him that she wanted to terminate about the middle of November so that she would have time to get back to Minneapolis, close up her apartment, and have a week before we were married. All of this took place, and we were married in the St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Minneapolis late in November 1958. Testing, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. After the wedding ceremony, we lived in a double house on the southwest corner of Douglas and Knox Avenue South. We lived there from late November until the following May, when we moved out to my house at Minnetonka Beach, Lake Minnetonka. At that time, this house was a summer house, so you could not live in it in the winter. However, the first summer we were married, we lived there until about October, when we moved back into the double house for the winter. The next spring, we decided to make alterations to my house at Minnetonka Beach, making it into an all-year-round house, so that we lived, so that when we moved out in May of that year, we lived there continuously through the following, all year round, for the next few years. We had some wonderful times together. We had several trips, different points in the country, and every winter we spent about a month in Palm Desert, California, in Phoenix, Arizona, and in Palm Beach, Florida. We also, the first year that we were married, had what we considered was our honeymoon when we went to and spent about a month in the Bahamas and at Nassau. We were very happy together. I do not think I will bring our happenings up to date, namely 1984, as those are not memories, as they are too recent to be memories. And this and these tapes are to recall all of the a lot of the pleasant memories which I like to bring back and have played back to me not only now and in future years. I will, however, briefly tell about my recent sickness. Of which I am still recovering. This day, the 15th of May, 1984. I was stricken with a very bad case of pneumonia about March 1st, 1983, and taken to the hospital on March 10th. There, my pneumonia became complicated with polyarteritis, inflammation of several arteries on the left side of my leg, from my hip down to my foot. At first, the doctors said that I had a stroke. A few days after making that pronouncement, they decided it was not a stroke, but was polyarteritis, for which they began treatments. I was very close to death, according to the doctors. Late in March. By the end of April, I was out of danger, and while still in the hospital, began physical therapy treatments at Sister Kenny Institute, which is a part of Northwestern Hospital, where I had been staying. After being in the hospital about 2 months, the doctor said I could go home if Virginia would be able to take care of me at home. So I did go home. And Virginia has been taking care of me ever since May 1st up until now, May 15th, for about a whole year. When I first came home, we had some additional help brought in the form of practical nurses and therapists. By the time when I came home, by that time, I was able to walk with a walker. And after I had been home about 2 months, I could walk with a cane. And by last autumn, I could still walk. I could walk without a cane. That was probably the first part of November. By that time, I could also drive my car without anyone going along with me, which gave me some independence and a chance to get out of the house and give Virginia some relief. Right now, I want to pay tribute to Virginia, who has taken such good care of me during all this time. I would also like to pay tribute to Nurse Elaine at Northwestern Hospital and physical therapist Julie Liebelt at Sister Kenny Institute. For about a month after I returned home from the hospital, namely during the month of May 1983, I would be transported from my home to the hospital in a van about twice a week. They would take me to the Sister Kenny Institute, where Julie Liebelt gave me physical therapy treatments and advanced my condition from not being able to walk at all to being able to walk quite a distance with a walker, and a very short distance with a cane. During the months of May and June 1983, I became more proficient with a cane and by August and September, I was beginning to walk without a cane. Dr. William Pauley was my family doctor. And while I was in the hospital, he called in other doctors who were specialists, one a neurologist and one a physical therapist. For quite a period of time, I was having hallucinations and had a considerable amount of distressing symptoms, which indicated that I was in a dangerous condition. I am now not fully recovered, my nerves are not back to normal. But I can walk 400 feet without a cane before I get so tired I need to sit down. This gives you a quick rundown of my illness, which in a few more months I hope to have completely in the background, and I hope to be completely recovered. I will now record some of my fond memories of the many, many friends, friendships, close friendships that I made with people in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Rochester in connection with the civic activities in which I engaged. In the year 1942, a group of seven of my social friends and I decided that we would form an organization to engage in improving the functioning of local and state government. Our motto was, instead of beefing, let's act. So the eight of us met once a week in our various homes, plotting our strategy. And then we started out, and each of us brought one additional friend into the group. That made our group consist of 16 men. We continued this process over a period of months, in fact, over a period of a few years, until we built the numbers of our group, of our groups in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Rochester, Minnesota, up to several hundred people, all of which became very good friends of mine because all of them were actively engaged in this civic activity, which we named good government groups. We made a study and did research on various aspects of local and state government where we thought corrections should be made and where there was waste, inefficiency, and crookedness. We operated for 10 years, meeting, our executive committee meeting once a week at noon or once a week at night. We became very effective, and I will not go into the details of what we worked at or what we accomplished, which was considerable and which brought us quite a bit of notoriety and which brought us a lot of satisfaction that we had done something worthwhile. After operating from 1942 to 1952, we decided that we should expand the group, give it another name, engage paid staff, to do research work and to head up the operation. We decided that we would make a study of similar large groups in other cities of the United States. And several of our number contacted these other groups in other cities and researched what they had been doing in those cities and reported back to the rest of our good government group. Therefore, in 1952, we changed our name from Good Government Group to Citizens League. And the Citizens League has been operating from 1952 to the present day, 1984. And we were the founders of this Citizens League, which has contributed so much to the life of our city and state. I have thus briefly told you how involved I had become, as I was the first president of the Good Government Group and I was the first president of the Citizens League. This took a great deal of my time, right up until after the Citizens League had been launched. And in 1954, the board of directors of the Citizens League decided it would be good for me to, and a few of our other key people in the Citizens League, to launch another organization called Citizens Organized for Responsible Government. The purpose of this organization was to elect was to seek out and elect better office holders on the city and county level, as at that particular time the labor unions had control of the city government and they were self-serving and a change needed to be made. The Citizens League could not involve itself in this type of activity, and that is why we formed Citizens Organized for Responsible Government, which we called CORG, Citizens C, O, Organization, R, Responsible, G, Government. I was the first president of CORG and continued active in it until we decided we had finished our work and had elected good people to the city council and to other positions of influence in our local government. I have made the previous brief statement about many years of my activity, and I like to look back on those years when I made thousands of fairly close friends and hundreds of very close friends. These are fond memories, and these people who I have known so well and who have known me so well bring up very fond memories of all that we did together. And after all, your best friends are those that you do worthwhile things with. And I surely had a lot of best friends. And we surely did a lot of worthwhile things together. I will now record the fond memories I have of the beautiful life that Mildred and I had together for over 30 years. And the wonderful home life we had with our four lovely children, Gene, Stuart Jr., Susan, Nancy. First, I will record a rundown of the different houses we lived in as a family. Mildred and I were married on June 2nd, 1927. During 1927 and 1928, we lived in two different apartment buildings. In the summer of 1928, we lived in a rented cottage on Crystal Bay near the Lafayette Club. I was a member of the Lafayette Club and played golf there starting that year, and was a member for 30 years thereafter. In 1929, the year after my father died, I bought my mother and father's house, a California-style house with two bedrooms, two baths, living room, dining room, kitchen, basement. And it was a very nice house for a couple, or a couple with one child. We bought this house from my mother, who had inherited it. In 1929. And we lived in the house, this California-style house, in 1929, 1930, 1931. It was in this house that Gene was born. Mildred and I decided that we were going to have more children, and therefore we would need more house. So in 1932, I tore down the house, the California-style house, and on its basement and additional land, I constructed a Georgian colonial house, red brick with white woodwork, with a columns on the front entrance. This house had a 28-foot by 15-foot living room, a center hallway with a balustraded stairway going from the first floor to the second floor, 28 feet by 10 feet, a large dining room, a large kitchen, a breakfast room, four bedrooms, 2.5 baths, and an amusement room in the basement, as well as storage and heating space. This was built on our land, which had 130 feet of frontage on Grays Bay. And we were very happy with our new house in 1933. Stuart was born in this house. In 1935, Susan was born in this house. And in 1941, Nancy was born in this house. Mildred and I and our four children lived in this house until the year 1945, when we sold the house and moved into a house at 2101 West Franklin Avenue, next to the Kenwood School, which house we purchased without any mortgages or encumbrances, as by that time I had substantial bank accounts and the mortgages were all paid off on the Grays Bay house a couple of years before I sold it. I have never had a mortgage on a house since that time. And as I will tell you, I have lived in several houses since that time. So in 1945, we moved into 2101 West Franklin, next to the Kenwood School. And we lived in this house from 1945 until 1958, except in the summertime, when we lived in our house at Minnetonka Beach on Lake Minnetonka. We purchased the Minnetonka Beach house in 1947. In the dead of winter. In fact, on about the coldest day of winter, after one of the major storms of that winter. I might stop right there and tell you about the purchase, as it's rather ridiculous. Mildred had, for 2 years, after we sold the Georgian Colonial House in 1945, been looking for a place to have a summer house, and we rented a summer house 2 different summers over in Cottagewood. For those 2 summers, but Mildred wanted to have a house of our own, and several times we had driven along the roads in the Minnetonka Beach District, and Mildred pointed out to me on a couple of occasions that right along here is where it would be very nice to own a house of our own that we could come to in the summertime, as the children are all involved in sailboat racing. And we need to be on the main lake so that the sailboat won't have to go under bridges. And this spot would be very fine if the house ever becomes available. Well, on this cold winter day, below zero by quite a bit, and the roads plugged up from the previous day's storm, Mildred called me at my office about 10 o'clock in the morning. And she said that in the want ads of the Sunday paper, there was a house advertised for sale right on that road on the main lake near Minnetonka Beach, just the place that we want to live. And Mildred wanted me to call the real estate agent immediately and arrange for a trip out to view the house, and that we should get going and sign up for the house before somebody else gets it. I remonstrated, saying that